like Deezer and like Rhapsody, the barriers and the cost of bringing to market globally a huge digital music service is so huge that the consolidation will absolutely happen for sure.
So you need someone like Apple, which has tons of cash, tons of power, to build a new sort of music brand that can sustain itself? Or?
Yeah, no, I don't want to say, it's a speculation, so I can't say
more. But do you need someone with immense resources to be able to build a sustainable music business in 2016?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, but let's just look at what Tidal was. It was...
Still is. It's not dead yet.
It's a slightly clever, if not cynical, move to buy a group of artists to acquire a streaming service, to capitalize it with their own identities and their involvement, to give it a series of exclusives to try and build its customer base so that they could then exit it for more than they paid for it. It was never a long-term play because long-term, no one's demonstrated that streaming is, for the people who are running the streaming services, a profitable business.
So when Jay-Z and all these other musicians did that press conference where he said, this is artists taking back control.
Awful. It was pretty awful. It wasn't about artists taking back control. It was about artists taking an equity stake in a cynical move to acquire business for, what, $50 million? $50 million.
This is my poker face.
Right, okay. About $50 million. And initially planning on flipping it to a telco who then weren't interested in doing the deal. And so they've spun it along and they've increased its user base by doing clever deals on Beyonce albums and Kanye albums and stuff like that. And they've got their user base up. But it's costing them an enormous amount of money to do those deals. It's costing them an enormous amount of money to subsidize the technology that's behind that service. And I'm sure there was only a matter of time before somebody bigger, a tech company, it's interesting that it's Apple, and, you know, if you want to go along with that speculation, I suspect it's, you know, Apple are doing lots of big deal exclusives. They've done the Drake exclusive. They've done stuff with Taylor Swift. And there will be more of those coming. This is a way of Apple taking out the other party in the game for doing exclusives. Spotify can't afford to do exclusives.
And what's your take on this, Hillian?
I don't know. I think that you're giving them too hard a time, the people who did it. I mean, it was a misguided press conference. I don't know. Most people probably saw it on TV or whatever with all these big stars being on stage saying, you know...
This is Tidal's sort of opening launch press conference.
Yeah, exactly. And they got a lot of criticism. And I do think that probably what they should have done, they should have brought out smaller artists and songwriters and producers that are behind the scenes. But you do have to mix it up. Obviously, not a lot of people would have watched a launch with a bunch of people they don't know who they are. From what I know from fellow songwriters and music producers, that Jay-Z reached out to a lot of people behind the scenes and asking them what he could do, what they wanted from a music service. And I also do think that, you know, why should he be treated harder than, say, Daniel Ek? He actually produces music, which Daniel doesn't.
Daniel Ek of Spotify.
That's Spotify, the founder of Spotify. He does play guitar. I've seen that on a picture in The Guardian. But I think that it's important. You know, it's hard, even if you come from the right place, it's very difficult, as you say, to run a streaming service and get people to pay for music. And I said, you know, if you can do exclusives, why not? That's, you know, I would do that if I could, but I'm a songwriter, so we're not allowed to.
The idea of exclusives is not, of course, just isolated to the music industry. It's going to be something that drives subscription. Certainly Netflix and House of Cards are good examples. I don't have a problem at all with the idea of exclusives. I think what's interesting about what Lohan says about artists having a stake is that the other narrative that we hear all the time from artists is that they never get paid from the big streaming services. So there's an argument that Tidal at least addresses some of those issues where you know, Spotify has been very, very transparent about what it pays out to the record labels. And the real issue is there isn't a great degree of transparency between the songwriters or the artists and the labels and the publishers.
So this is, I mean, so the big question that I'm really keen to get to the bottom of is who is getting paid? Because songwriters say that they're not getting paid, the record labels say that, you know, their revenues and profits are down, the streaming sites are losing money. So where is the money going? I mean, who is accruing the value here? Let's go with you, Lauren.
I mean, I could talk about my business specifically, but you've got to remember there's still fewer than 100 million paying music subscribers in the world, in the whole world, in a population of 7 billion people. Now, I'm not saying all of those would have been buying CDs, but fewer than 100 million is not a lot. There's over a billion people consuming music on YouTube. So where's the money going? It's probably going into Google's advertising pocket. That's where a lot of it's going, and we're not getting any of that. With regards to the distributions that are coming out of the streaming services, whether it be Spotify or Apple Music, who are the two big ones, it's done on a prorated basis on the amount of consumption, the amount of content that's being consumed. So that's going to Universal, Sony and Warner's, who are getting, you know, the lion's share of that. You'll hear the streaming services say, you know, but yes, there's the fourth major, which is the independents, because they love to bunch us all together. But actually what we're all getting is a tiny sliver of that fourth major lot. We are not one consolidated unit where thousands, tens of thousands of individual businesses and hundreds of thousands of individual creators. And what we're getting is minuscule compared to what we were getting before. But the majors are doing very well out of it. I wouldn't say it's necessarily making up the decline of their download business and their physical business. But they're still getting good chunks of money for it. I mean, what I've always maintained, and I've said it several times beforehand, if you're building a business on sand, if the largest streaming service in the world still needs to raise $1 billion a year to continue to survive, how long are they going to be able to continue to do that, particularly in a financial climate like the one that we're about to go into?
And it's, I mean, is that something wrong with streaming itself, or is that something wrong with how much they're charging, or what's the problem?
I think
there?
Again, something I've said often is it's the assumption that a one size fits all model works, that, you know, $10 or £10 a month is the right model, or the prevailing monthly amount for every streaming, so every country in the world. That's a lot of money. You know, when we always used to work before streaming on the assumption that the casual music consumer would buy on average two and a half CDs a year, 2.5 albums a year. So they'd pay £25, less than £25 probably, because they'd buy the albums on discount. So less than 20 quid a year. So you're asking them to jump up to £120 a year or go free. So it's pretty easy to guess which direction they're going to go in. So the drain is coming, that the assumption that in order to get people to subscribe, you have to give them a free taster first. But the free services are too good. And, you know, I often look at things through the eyes of my teenage kids, and because I won't have a subscription service in the house, which is probably a false economy now, they all consume their music on YouTube, which makes me even more frustrated. But I'm going to have to reconcile this at some point.
So they're not listening to your compilation albums, is it?
No, I keep forcing them to them, but no, they haven't got CD players, which is quite irritating.
I mean, but the thing that we hear is that if you're an artist and your song is on YouTube or Spotify and you get, you know, 1 million plays, you still haven't earned enough to buy a beer. And is that because no one's paying, or is that because the record labels are, you know, eating up all the cash, or why is that happening?
Well, I think there's certainly as a songwriter, there are a few different reasons for it. I mean, when it comes to YouTube, they're just not paying out any money at all. I mean, if you looked at what you get for like 1 million streams, which for us, if I wrote 100%, there's some saying, I mean, it's different for different artists, but in general, I've compared my royalty statements to my colleagues, my other friends, and what kind of calculated how much on average we get for 1 million streams. And it is, if I've written 100% of the song and I own my own publishing, it's $90. So, and most likely I've written it with somebody and somebody else is collecting a publishing on it, so it's even less. I would say most people would probably see per quarter maybe $5 a month from streaming services or from YouTube. And obviously we can't audit YouTube. We can't say no to YouTube, which drags down everything else. As songwriters, we have a separate problem as well because the accounting is so shitty. Excuse my French. Spotify, for example, they basically send out what the usage has been of the songs, and then they say, invoice us for your share to the PROs, the performing rights societies, and the publishers and whatever. So there's no specifics. There is no database that is authoritative in that sense. So it is a bit of a mess on that side. So I would assume that some of the money also doesn't actually reach the people it's supposed to be reaching.
And, oh sorry, go on, jump in.
Well, I was just going to say there is an incredibly inefficient system. If you look at the speed with which money that is paid by a consumer to any streaming service then takes to reach a songwriter in particular, publishing is much more inefficient. You are looking at years, and there's not many industries where that would be acceptable.
It'll take years to get paid.
It can do.
But I do have to say that the thing is that obviously it has in the past when we had two different forms, mainly two different or three different forms of ways of getting paid or consumption as a songwriter. It would be sales, it would be performance, like radio and television and whatever, and it'd be syncs, like commercials and whatever. We've all been able, with radio and with sales, to pay songwriters correctly. I think one of the issues is that when it was set up, when the digital systems for streaming services were set up, that part of it kind of was put on the back burner. So it, now the whole industry is trying to catch up with how do we get that database that with works that are just growing on by the millions in a week to kind of try to catch up and get the correct information.
But before we get to how will people be paid, I'll spend most of my day at work listening to music on YouTube. Five or six songs, I'll
shame
get...
Shame on you.
Shame on me. Every 5 or 6 songs, I'll get like a 5-second advert that I can skip, right? So I can just listen to music for free all day. And so isn't it always going to be difficult to build any kind of sustainable business when in the middle of the room you have YouTube effectively eating up, all of your consumers' attention?
Well, radio is free, right? You don't pay for
it's
radio.
Not, it's not on demand. It's not on demand. Thing. It's not the same thing.
Well, I think... Look, I mean, the so-called value gap is such a well-trodden path, and essentially there's, Google is on the
value transfer is what we call it.
Okay, value transfer, sorry. They're on the wrong end of a very significant lobbying effort and have come out today and said, actually, there is a place for ad-supported music when the ad market really gains some momentum. So... Yeah, well, look, I genuinely think that there's never really an accurate comparison between what artists got paid pre-digital from radio and what they get paid now on an ARPU basis. So what's the revenue per user that you are seeing?
Yeah, as in you think that there wasn't this sort of golden era where artists earned a ton from radio and now all that money's gone, is it?
There were golden years and they were made from records and CDs, for sure.
Yeah,
but the thing is, of course, as Loan was saying, it's like you can't compare YouTube to radio because I can't choose what's on the radio. But with YouTube, it's replacing sales because it's about access and consumption and not about ownership anymore. So what we're losing, and I think that's the thing that is not being addressed properly in that whole debate about Safe Harbor and YouTube, is that. What are they cannibalizing? They're cannibalizing sales. Like people don't have to buy music anymore. And you don't even have to like pay for a subscription if you can get it on YouTube. And that needs to change. I mean, there needs to be a way that a record company or an artist or a songwriter, that they at least have a choice to say, okay, well, I don't want my music on this particular service. And that's where YouTube is different, because at least we could do that with Spotify. You could do that with Tidal and everybody else. But YouTube, you can't. And I know that people are talking about the Content ID and whatever. Me, as an independent, I'm not allowed to use Content ID. And Content ID, apart from that, it's not very
Warner Music employ 40 people to take their content off YouTube. 40 people around the world who are employed solely to police YouTube for them. I'm an independent. We're a large independent. We're one of the largest independents in the world. I have to hire firms at huge cost a year to take our content down. And my son takes great pleasure in showing me when my tracks are up there unlicensed. You know, and it's an infinite game of whack-a-mole. That's what DMCA has given YouTube. I mean, it's a terrible thing. And it's all very well saying, you know, but once the advertising market gets up to speed, that will redistribute money. But how long is it going to take? And in the meantime, it's eroded the whole economy in the music business. And so what you've got now is you've got an industry that's consolidated into three great big powerhouse monsters who are effectively banks, and a load of individual creators. But none of those creators, and indeed now independent labels. And we've seen a dramatic shrinking in independence. Yes, you could say that as a sector, independents represent 30% of the content consumed. But there are a handful of labels in the world, independent labels, that are able to break artists, that are able to take artists all the way through. Most independents get to a point where they have to give it to a major record company because they've got the distribution money, they've got the marketing money, they've just got the muscle that you can't do as an independent on your own. And what you're getting is that the majors, as banks, just hover around and look at the best investments. So you end up with a homogenized music scene. If you look at our charts, we've had that Drake record has now been number one in the UK for 12 weeks. For 12 weeks. The
it's
last
like
time
the Beatles all over again.
Except, can you hum the record?
I
no, it's
I
been there for 12 weeks because the distribution channels are controlled by the major labels.
But wasn't it ever so? I mean, was there a
no,
time
it
when
wasn't.
These
no,
major
it
labels
was not.
Were weak?
I would disagree with that. I think what the industry keeps trying to do is put the genie back in the bottle when it comes to the internet. And what the internet does is democratize the creative community to an extent that's never been seen before. So I think the industry is in very grave danger of being too complacent about their artist relationships, because the next wave of disruption is not going to come on the distribution side. You can already see it happening with artists. And, you know, I think if it wasn't Google, it would be somebody else that allows people to upload stuff to the internet where it is available.
And just picking up on that, I mean, isn't there a gap effectively between the people producing music and the people consuming it, whereby simply people are not accustomed to paying for music any longer, and so therefore the industry needs to adapt to them rather than trying to go back to a world where you did have to buy a CD or a label or a record or something like that?
But it settles down. I mean, the theory of democratization is all well and good, but actually when the radio stations that play the records are being led by the records that are sitting at the top of the streaming charts, which are being led by a handful of very powerful playlists that sit on those music services, which are lobbied and controlled by those streaming services in cahoots with the major labels who push the content to them and give them access to the artists, it means that independent music doesn't break through. Yes, independent creators can make a bit of money, they can get a check here and there, and you know they can probably run a cottage industry. But unless they've got the most populist music that is then picked up by a major who can then pick up the phone to Daniel or Jimmy and say, you know, this is a priority for us, and if you give us priority status on your playlist, we'll give you access to this superstar artist, and we'll give you this exclusive. And those deals are being done all the time. There are hundreds of those deals being talked about all the time. But they don't come to independents. They go to the majors, and the majors are the ones who get their repertoire promoted on those playlists. It's as bad as Paola was in the 50s.
So whenever I open up Spotify and I go to the homepage, you're saying that those playlists that I see are not simply what everyone else in the world was listening to that day, and actually the labels are making sure that their musicians are...
It's naive to think that there's not a lot of label involvement in what is going on those playlists. And the most popular playlist, Today's Top Hits, for example, which has something like 6.5 million followers.
We're not going to disagree about the pernicious effect of having only a small number of big companies. I think when it comes to play, and don't forget, the labels have been out buying playlist companies.
Yeah.
So they're out there. When you think about how the streaming services have evolved, and they're still very, very young, I think that there will be a world in not too distant future where a greater degree of regulation is applied. It seems to me that...
Who would regulate it?
Competition authorities, for a start, have over the years many times intervened in the affairs of the music industry.
You
don't interfere too much with Google, though, unfortunately.
but just to go to the streaming side, we know that, say, Spotify pays out 70% of its revenues to the labels. You're saying that the labels will make Spotify put their music up front. Can a company like Spotify, is it disrupting the music industry, or is it sort of under the cosh of the music industry?
Look, Spotify is a great service. It's a great experience. I think they're very squeezed. I think they're very squeezed by the music industry because you can't operate any business really on a 30% gross margin, particularly a technology business where you're burning through, $250 million a year in staffing costs. You're not going to make a net margin out of that business. And they've only got three people to negotiate with, and they have to do deals. Well, the publishers as well, but they've got to do deals with those people. So otherwise you don't have a comprehensive service. You have to have deals with everybody. So I don't think they've got it easy at all. And also, in the case of Spotify, two of those, maybe all of them actually, I think actually all of them, it's Vivo who only has two of the majors involved, are shareholders as well. So they're exerting shareholder pressure. They've also got all of the content. I don't think it's easy for Spotify at all. I don't think it necessarily goes that when they're having their terms negotiations, those are exchanged for playlist support. But of course, they're talking to similar people.
Actually, I'll come to the audience for some questions in a moment. So if you want to think of any questions, would you like to see, and do you think it would be good, if theoretically possible, if we stop people being able to listen to music without paying, as they would have for a CD, or to buy or when they bought records, or even when they download music, say?
I think it was a bit unfair to say that the music industry is trying to put the genie back in the bottle as if you don't want to use the internet. I would say that musicians and songwriters and producers are the early adopters of most technology and that have been in the forefront of a lot of internet innovation. I think that the problem that we have is when there are multinational billion-dollar internet companies that are siphoning off the majority of the income. I would say, and I know this is kind of, when I started writing my column for The Guardian, we kind of used to joke, I'm going from like the industry that's been completely screwed by the internet to the industry that is even more screwed by the internet. Should I be like a postman next? My worry, because they're in the same, the newspaper business is in the has the same
problem.
We're doing
fine.
What was it? The Guardian editor has now gone out and tried to kind of basically beg for money for the journalists. And for me as a consumer, and this goes both for as a news consumer and as a music consumer, I worry about the quality and the kind of what I get because of this kind of big free option that where the people that are creating the content can't survive and can't continue on. And I think that, I mean, free should be an option, but it should be an option that is chosen. There's always been, in the music industry, things given away with the hope of making money later. But if you actually have a streaming service that you can't opt out of, then that is a problem.
You mean a choice for the artists, not for the consumers?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Who would presumably always choose free, if you're a
consumer. Yes, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they, you know?
You gave a slightly quizzical look when she mentioned quality of music and.
Well, I think that the undiscovered artists don't mind their music being given away for free. In fact, they absolutely want it to be everywhere as much as possible. So there is an inflection point when you can see that artists, then expect to be paid for their work. I think if you look at the way, one thing I really do agree with actually is what Lohan said about the models. I think one way to really counteract this feeling of free is to have some new models. Not everybody wants a service where you have the world's music at your fingertips. Most people don't know what to do with that. There's a huge amount of wastage, actually. So the idea that we can be much more diverse in the way that we distribute music, and that's where you come back to the question of, okay, well, who can influence that? And really, it is the major labels and the major publishers.
But they have no interest in doing that because the £10 a month subscription works really well for them. And if they start moving people or discouraging music services from pushing in that direction, it's inevitably going to erode the revenues that they're making. You know, I've spoken in the past and said, you know, that don't make people pay $120 a year. Give them the opportunity to pay as they go. Give them the opportunity to make micropayments, give them the opportunity to have, pay-as-you-go top-up cards. You know, I'm going to buy £10 worth of music and I'll listen to it till it runs out. But that doesn't lock people in, and it doesn't drive that model. And they're not keen on it. And what they do when you go to them with a new music business model, a new service model, and you say, well, I want to experiment with this financial model, and say, that's great, that's fantastic. Firstly, give me an advance of X and give me equity in your business of Y, and I'll support it for you.
How much music should £10 buy you?
One CD, I'd suggest.
One of your CDs.
I'm not trying to put the genie back in the bottle at all.
Do you want to come back on that?
Well, I think, I don't think the majors are that stupid to not consider basic pricing economics. So, they could quite easily figure out that if they sell, let's for argument's sake say that Spotify costs £5 a month, but they trebled their user base. Well, I think that they'd probably do that if they're not so stupid just to hang on to the 10. There is a strategic imperative for them, and I think it is, we have an opportunity with digital to drive up pricing in a way that we've never seen before. So including with the likes of Pandora. Pandora pays a tiny amount for each track streamed. That is never the case in radio. So per track royalties are a good example of that.
You say that the majors aren't stupid. I genuinely had a conversation with a senior major label executive who said to me, you're absolutely right, Lohan, subscription is far too expensive, £10, ridiculous. If we had subscription at £2 a month, we'd have five times as many customers. I had that conversation.
I don't doubt it.
But there are services that have lower prices in America and in other... I mean, I'm Swedish. There, it's pretty much only one service in Sweden, Spotify. I think it's 90% of music consumption goes through Spotify, which is not a good thing when you have one pipeline for any music being released, because it puts a lot of power in one place. And Universal loves that power, but that Spotify gives them, but it's a bit more iffy for independents. I think that the one, some of the more fluctuating, more complicated ones that become like pay as you go or things like that, have so far not kind of worked with consumers, because it could be a little bit too confusing.
There's too much friction.
Yeah, exactly. You want to have as little friction as possible. I think that the issue with Spotify, and in all honesty, the average pay by per subscriber is not £10, because they have their student discount, which is less. They have on and on, kind of £1 a month or £1 for 3 months and whatever. I think it's more when you average it out, maybe around £5 that they make per subscriber. The problem is the free on Spotify is too good. Like, I've listened to it. I mean, I have to say I actually subscribe to Spotify. But I've listened to the free version, and it's not very different from mine. You know, there's an ad maybe every 5-6 songs, and usually that ad comes from a record company. So it's like a, you know, I just listen to like a little bit of some other music.
And what do you make of this idea that streaming has potential to give labels more pricing power? I mean, what do you make of that?
I think the labels undoubtedly will call the shots on the consumer pricing, and they used to be pretty hush-hush, if you like, about that. But it's obvious, right? So they will definitely at some point have to do something if the rate of growth doesn't improve, because when the internet hit them, they lost a huge amount of money and revenue, and the growth just isn't quite getting where it needs to be.
Does anyone have any questions from the audience? We could, great. Why don't we start here at the very front? And there's a mic here.
Hi there.
Oh, is that?
You know, we crowdfund just about anything nowadays. So could we use this, break the perception that artists have to earn money from actually selling something, but when they get really popular and people love them, and we create a platform to fund the artist's life so that they have the time to create the music that people love, has that model been explored?
Yes. I think that the issue that with the artists that work for in particular are legacy artists, artists that have already kind of capitalized on the old model. So you'll have, for them, it's ideal because they've basically been through the major label or record label system, and they're so well known that they can actually function without a traditional record company. But for new artists, it's next to impossible to get people to invest in something that they don't know that well has not been working very well in the Kickstarter, in the crowdfunding. Most of the people I know that use Pledge, which is one of those sort of, they don't like to be called crowdfunders, a crowdfunding site. I can't remember what they'd like to be called, but it's basically where people can gain access to maybe record, like seeing videos in the studio with the artist and whatever. Can be very useful, but it's useful if you've already come a certain way, part of the way.
So this is a thing where, say, someone like Radiohead is able to do each album as if they're their own business, but and to not have their music on Spotify or whatever else, but for a smaller new act, that's just not viable.
I think I agree with that in the main. I think, you know, when I talked about this democratization and the power of the artist increasing, there are some really good examples of artists who are doing it themselves. And they are falling outside of the traditional label system. Back in the day, it used to be the case, if you were a band, really your only hope was to get discovered down the pub. Label would write you a big check, which you'd blow on lots of stuff, but you wouldn't really pay any attention to how the money was coming back to you. These days, artists so much better informed. They're inquisitive. They want to know how the royalties are going to flow, and they don't believe in the system. If you look at you know, if you slice and slice and slice and slice and slice, which is what happens in the distribution process.
Slice the sales, the revenues.
Exactly. Yeah. So every bit of consumer money has to fund, for example, a record label's office in a country in which the artist has no interest in, really. So you could see how, you know, looking forward, there are some glimmers of hope for artists where you can see them becoming successful, becoming big superstar artists, but without that, you know, big injection of cash from a label.
But why does it follow that the best new talent in the world, the best songwriters, the next Lennon and McCartney, or the most amazing musicians, the most amazing player, the next Jimi Hendrix, now has to understand how royalties work and how to best market their product on social media and how to crowdfund and you know, why can't they just concentrate on the music and be really good? Now, that what marks you out as a successful, independent, self-starting artist is that you're the whole deal. You're a business person as well as a musician. Now, the best musicians in the world aren't necessarily the best business people in the world. In fact, generally, the best musicians in the world are not the best business people in the world. Are we not going to miss out because the great sleeping talent that is there that needs labels to discover, nurture, fund, invest in? You know, when we take an artist to market, it costs us £500,000. Every act we sign, we've basically notionally given up £500,000 and 3 years of our lives and their lives to get them there. And then 20% of those guys will make it, which is quite a good strike rate, really. But we write off that money because that's what it takes. Because I don't want London Grammar, my band, sitting there going, oh, now, what should my royalty splits on YouTube be? You know, that's not what... I want them sitting there making amazing music and working with their manager to, you know, work out how their stage show works. I don't want them sitting there going, how should my lighting be? You know, that's not what they do. They are musicians and they make art. Why do we want artists to be brilliant business people as well?
Let's take another question.
Eventually, that they were signed to Parlophone for quite a while.
Is that mic working?
I jumped in the queue here. Sorry about that.
Go ahead, please. Yeah.
No, but it's. I'm just gonna say because that's why they founded it. Because great writers founded Apple Records. Eventually,
but they didn't. They started off signed to Parlophone, released numerous albums on Parlophone. They became the biggest band in the world, and then you had McCartney, who was a super astute, money-orientated business guy, and his father-in-law, who really knew stuff.
Yeah.
Who then turned around and they set up a company to do it, and then they fell out over it. Of course, artists can become brilliant business people, but why, when you're looking and trying to find the next? You know, Justin Bieber isn't a brilliant business guy. He's got brilliant people around him. Brilliant people around him.
Do you want to come back? Who guided his career.
I just was going to say, because it's related to my question I was going to ask before, which is that, isn't it the same? I mean, I feel like this could have been the 1950s sitting up here with the record labels and fighting against the machine and all that. I mean, is it really different now? That's my question.
No, different in what sense?
Oh, like in the economic sense.
I think that it's definitely different. I think that that's a bit. It's the 1950s, I guess. But if you would compare it to the 1950s, it's probably that there are like major big tech companies that would be what the record labels was at that time. Because at the moment, and this is the thing that I wanted to address that Greg said, if you're at a certain level as an artist, then you can actually use a label. You can, as a service, like pick and choose the services that you want from a label. That's certainly a very new way of working with labels. I know, you know, Robbie Williams, who obviously was really big already before, but his management are very big on the whole thing of picking and choosing the services and being a partner with the record labels. And I think that happens a lot more now than what happened in the 50s. The record deals in the 50s, people got 1% of the royalties. Now, you know, a basic would be 20%, which is not, but if you're in with an independent.
but some
independents that do 50-50 deals. It all depends, and there are a lot more avenues if you want to go the record label route, I think.
Should we take a question from this chap here and then the lady at the back?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back maybe 10 years or so when the Arctic Monkeys came out. And essentially what the Arctic Monkeys did is they gave away more or less their first album for free on the internet. And they weren't necessarily great at marketing themselves. I was in Sheffield at the time. It was more or less on a web page, which everyone shared around in Sheffield. And you could go online and download it. And it seems like we've come full circle very quickly from that time in 2006 where everyone was saying, what is the role for record labels at this time when everyone can give their music away for free on the internet? Isn't that a problem for the labels? But now we're back in the position of saying, over the past few years, due to Spotify, etc., that's now a problem for the artists because the labels, due to their resources, have essentially cornered the market where you have to get on certain streaming services. And I just wanted to ask the general question, how do we get to that next stage where the power goes back to the artists again? Because it seems like, again, the labels have all of that power and they've come to that position very quickly. But even the concept of a record label, I feel is very odd these days because we don't have any records being released, but we still have this concept of a label, which is buying everything up and still influencing the market.
So why do you still exist? Do we need?
I'll go if you like. Because music needs to be crafted, and to get to large commercial success. I mean, the Arctic Monkey story is a bit apocryphal. It's not necessarily what you saw. There was a lot of very clever management going on there, and that record was hyped to shit and was the biggest bidding war at the time. And Alex chose to sign to Domino because his favorite band, Franz Ferdinand, was signed there. But every major was in, and that deal still went for nearly £1 million. So there was a lot of record industry lawyers and everybody else. Sorry.
That's all right.
It's never quite what you see in terms of it being raw. They knew exactly what they were doing, giving a small amount of records. But parking that, the role of the record company is to... If you want to, yeah, it's fine. You can make your music, and you can take your music to market, and you can do your stuff on the internet, and you can, you know, market yourself and build your own social media channels and go out there and gig and sell some T-shirts and do some bit of crowdfunding, and you can make a living from it. That's fine. But if you want to be big, if you want to be at the top of the charts, if you want to have hit records, if you want to be on TV, if you want to be paying main stages at festivals, you need a record company. There is not a single artist that anyone can name that hasn't got to the top of the tree without having a record company behind them. There's not a single one.
But is that because the record label are adding value, or because, like you said earlier, they have like a bank-like rent-seeking position?
All of it. Well, I'll talk about what my team do. You know, we discover artists at the rawest possible stage. We then sit with them. We understand them. We become close to them. We understand what motivates them. We listen to their music and what they want to achieve with their music. We introduce them to producers and to other songwriters if that's appropriate. If it's not appropriate, we don't do that. We then pay for studio time. We bring in other musicians. We help them craft those records. We then sit down and listen to those records and work out if they're going to work or not. If they don't, we pay their living expenses while they're doing all of this. When they're going out on tour and they're... they haven't got a band, we'll get them a band together, we'll buy them rehearsal studios, we'll pay for them to travel and for their hotel rooms and for their food while they're traveling, so they can get their chops, so they can get good at making their music. And while they're doing that, and we spend 2 to 3 years developing every act that we've got, and we develop their music, we develop their live act, and then when it's ready, we will start to make music available, whether that's on the internet or whether we take it to radio stations. And then we'll go and we'll build a PR firm around that. We'll just build a story. And then if it goes, it goes. And that's fantastic. And then when it goes, then you pump the marketing money into it. But it's the money, it's that £500,000 that you're spending before you even go to market. And you can't, artists don't have those sorts of resources. They don't have the, you know, I've got an A&R and marketing team who between them have got 70 years experience doing this. And we've got 21 number one singles under our belts. And we've sold 70 million albums. We know what works. Now, of course, things are changing and it's different. But fundamentally, we know what a hit record sounds like. And, you know, I'm not, we're quite a big independent, so we're very interested in hits. I'm not, we've never really been a worthy label as such, you know, we're just, but some labels, they go, you know, here's a bit of an advance and you make your records and we'll just put them out, and if it happens, it happens. That's not my business.
Do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of compare that to publishing. I always tell a story where what it's like for songwriters and why publishers are important for songwriters. And I kind of put the analogy as me walking into a bank and asking if they could give me a loan for $100,000 so I can just make music for the next 4 years. Of course, they'd laugh me out of the bank, but they might say, okay, so what's your collateral? I got these songs. That's basically what happens when it happened when I went to a publisher. You know, they're like, okay, well, we think that maybe we can make back that $100,000 off of that. And obviously, once if you have a publishing deal, even ones that's recouped, they continue to make a percentage. And with publishing, unlike record labels, publishers always get 50% or less of the royalties coming in, so the songwriter is always makes more than the publisher in the long run. And so what my publisher did, they invested that money, and I'm convinced that I would not have become a professional songwriter if it wasn't for their investment. And they made I recouped my deal, and they made money off of me after that. I don't have a problem with them making money, because I wouldn't even be making music full time if it wasn't for them. And I think that's to get back to the bank analogy. Like, in what other business will you have people like Loan kind of just putting in that money with only a 20% chance of making that money back?
Should we take the question from the lady at the back? There's a mic there.
So I was wondering what the next big ideas will be, and what was gonna, where to go from here, because it feels a bit like match fixing. The major labels have fixed what's on, you know, Spotify's playlists. They've sort of set it up so that their artists win. And when you win big, people don't mind. Drake, Beyonce don't mind their music being streamed, because it's an advertisement for a show and they're gonna make money off the shows. What's gonna happen, because it's pretty cutthroat and there might be a demise in the industry? How do smaller labels hope to survive? Because the model that has been described by Ministry of Sound, it's more like what Roc Nation do. It's a bit like management. When there's no physical merchandise to shift around and it's not generating revenue, surely doesn't there need to be a law across the board for people to pay a bit more? If I want to read an FT article, I have to pay £1.50 or whatever.
Please
or
do
more.
Pay.
You force us to. We can't get into the website without paying. So we're paying for the quality of the journalism. So to pay for your songwriting, the workmanship and everything, if across the board, so that smaller labels can survive, even the big labels agree to a higher fee per song, per YouTube play, even if it's a nominal amount leaving people's accounts, or what do you intend to do to claim back the internet?
I think it's very difficult. I think we've educated two generations now. The millennials are now Generation Z, the music is free. And, the gate is open, the horse has bolted. I'm still confident that, you know, music will survive and surface. It will find a way. It's like that thing in Jurassic Park. It will find a way. But I worry that the like I've said earlier, the creativity, the stuff that we're presented through mainstream media and through now mainstream music services will be very focused. But for people who want to go and find stuff that's on the edge, it's all going to be there. It's all going to be discoverable. It's just going to be very difficult for the people who are making that music to earn a living from it. But it's never been easy for any musicians really to earn a living. I think the problem is, it's always, again, it goes back to perception, because what the public think and what the kids who are consuming music for free think is that musicians are Jay-Z and Beyonce and Drake. And that's what, if you're a musician, you got loads of money. If you work for a record company, you're driving around in a limo. You know, there's loads and loads of money in the music industry. And we've been really, really bad at PRing ourselves. So
it's the music videos.
It's all bling. And, you know, when you turn around to an aspiring and growing musician, it's really, really tough. And a tiny, tiny proportion of those make it through to the top. And then they show off about it and take stakes in Tidal.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I get the question from the chap in the corner, because we're coming towards the end.
Thanks. You've covered a lot of this, but really it's more of an observation than a question, which is $500,000 to develop an artist is going for a big pop artist. And so many artists that you would think, artists selling out 2,000 capacity venues in London or whatever, the advance they're going to get from a record label is like $40,000 to make the record, master it, two videos, all the other deliverables. And those guys, and they're going to need tour support probably to get to the point where they're going to break even. So at that level, which is the sort of level at which well, those sort of artists are operating, just to make a record, the amount of money that you need to get the studio time and to pay the other musicians, if it's not a band, it's really getting to the point when the quality of production is going down, because even if you use really cheap studios, if you're trying to record acoustic live instruments or live instruments, you need certain amount of quality of space and quality of technicians, et cetera, et cetera. And it really has got to a point, I think, now when it can't really get any lower, otherwise people will stop making certain types of music, and you can have sort of bedroom electronica on a very low budget. But
let's on this sort of note we'll end. I mean, do you think that music has got worse, either whether it's production quality or the types of music we can produce, or just more generally in terms of like aesthetic quality?
Well, I'm the very worst of people to ask, because as a 40-year-old lawyer, I'm a huge hip-hop fan, and most people who like music don't typically like hip-hop. I think the quality of production is a really interesting question. I would say, back in the good old days where, artists could have a huge amount, Pink Floyd in the studio is legendary. Spent thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of label money, because they were indulged, but they were also given the opportunity to be creative. And I think from a pure production quality perspective, undoubtedly, I think there has been a reduction.
I would say that, people always talk about technology and how easy it is to record. I think that the most valuable commodity for a musician is time. If you're able to do music full time, the music is gonna be better. That's just a fact. If you have to do the music after having worked a full day at Tesco's, you're not gonna be able to really dig deep and make the music that is gonna reach more people or the quality of music. I mean, I don't know a single artist. That a great artist that does not do music full time, and I think that's where the risk lies. If we'll just have more hobby musicians, I think with hip hop, it's obviously on a production level cheaper to make in general. But do we only want hip hop? We want a range of stuff. I mean, I would love to see another Pink Floyd emerge at some point, or any of those kind of acts that actually take a long time in the studio. And is that going to happen? I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot. I was on the jury of the Ivan Novello's, or one of the juries, and I'm not saying any names, but there's so much paint by numbers writing now, because you need to have a hit. There's like, you have to have a single to make money. If you don't have a single, you just will not make any money at all now, because of how streaming works. So there's very little space for, say, an album like Hunky Dory, for example, where you can discover album tracks down the line that maybe were not singles to start off with, that you know, just grow on you. And I think that would be my worry about it.
And do you want to have a final word on that? Or
I do think one of the things that technology has done is democratize production. And it's not just electronica. I think there's amazing stuff you can do in home studios now, and it has made the process of recording a lot cheaper. I mean, a lot of the money that we're investing in artists is around the lives and giving them the opportunity. Well, if you want a Pink Floyd-esque album that's taken years and years to make, wait for our next London Grammar album. They spent 3 years in the studio, and you know, and that is a beautifully, finely crafted piece of music, and you know, they're completely uncompromising, and so it does.
They've won Ivor Novello Awards.
And they've won an Ivor Novello Award as well. So I mean, it does. It's still out there, but you're absolutely right. They had to be doing it full time before they were able to make. In fact, the first album we made with them, we didn't release because it wasn't. None of us felt it was right. We went back and made another one, and that happens. That's happened on a number of occasions where we've recorded whole sets and gone, you know, this just isn't there, but the experience has been a good part of the journey. But, you know, there's a lot that can be done in bedrooms, that can be done in home studios, there's a lot that can be done on Macs and using Logic, and, you know, you don't have to, you know, that's where the ideas come, and often those little ideas that are recorded on someone's laptop have got all the charm and joy and wonder that you wouldn't get if you went into a big SSL studio, you know. Yeah. It's the magic in music isn't always about the production quality. It's about capturing something. Very often on records, it's that original demo vocal that you record time and time again, but you can never quite get the nuance of that back again. You know that.
Great. Well, yeah, thank you all three for joining us, and thanks everyone for listening. And next up, we're going to be discussing peer-to-peer or marketplace or online lending. It's raining outside, so don't leave. You should all stay. But we'll be starting in a second. Thank you.